This episode of the Missed Spots podcast is brought to you by Amazon Prime, the amazing service from Amazon that allows you to get free two-day shipping on nearly every item available on their website, plus access to Amazon Prime Music and Prime Video service with tons of movies and TV shows, including the acclaimed original series Transparent starring Jeffrey Tambor. Now you can get a free 3-month trial of Amazon Prime by going to missbots.com/prime. Plus, if you do that, Amazon's going to throw in a free 3-month trial of HBO on your Prime Video. Nothing else you have to say or do. You get that for free with this trial as well. That way you can catch up on Game of Thrones, Westworld, or you can watch anything from HBO's amazing back catalog, like The Sopranos, The Wire. It's all there for you. After your trial, you can pay just $99 for the entire year of Prime. Trust me, that sounds like a lot, but as a Prime member myself, that money more than pays for itself in just 2-day shippings after just a couple of months. So head over to missspots.com/prime right now and try Amazon Prime for free for 3 months and join what practically everyone should be a part of, Amazon Prime.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a free event.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
Welcome back to the Missed Spots podcast on MissedSpots.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me, as always, is the Dean Ambrose to my Seth Rollins. Here's Kevin.
And fun fact, like Dean Ambrose, I also once attacked a person with a hot dog cart. That is all I can say about it until the statute of limitations runs out.
About how long do we have to?
I can't. I really have said too much already. I think we need to move on.
All right. Siri, remind me to ask Kevin about the hot dog cart incident in 1 year. All right. So we don't have a whole lot to go over. We have Raw. We have SmackDown. But luckily, WWE is giving us a little break from pay-per-views as we head into SummerSlam.
When is SummerSlam, actually?
It is August 20th.
So we have quite some time.
Yes. Yes, we do. So they have plenty of time to build up to this pay-per-view and then just show us the same people interacting in the same matches over and over again.
That's what we always look forward to.
Yes, absolutely.
Do we want to start it with Raw? Is that the best way to do this? I always forget how we do this.
Let's do this memento style and work backwards.
I think we should probably start with 205 Live, okay. The most exciting hour on television. Now, let's start with Raw. Kurt Angle shows up to his hometown crowd, and basically that's why he was there, just to talk to his hometown crowd and be popular and be chant. They chant "You suck it, Kurt," which is traditional, right?
Yes.
It's a traditional thing in the WWE. When Jordan and Gable were coming up in NXT, they would chant their names to like Gable.
Mm-hmm.
Gable, or I'm going to do the other one just to make sure everyone understands where we're going with this. Jordan.
Oh, yes, right, yes, yeah.
Why don't they just chant Angle?
As I've gone over many times in this podcast that we do, wrestling fans are a very nostalgic bunch.
Sure.
And they don't like new things too often. And when they do, they like them a lot. But they always tend to go back to really liking the stuff they remember.
I just feel like Kurt, he comes out and he starts like playing to the crowd, this giant smile on his face. One day he's going to snap, and he's just going to put every single kid in the front row in the ankle lock.
Because at the same time?
Yeah.
He probably could fit that many kids' ankles.
Well, you all suck. I'm just saying, I'm predicting it now. It will happen. The fact that we got Brock Lesnar unannounced coming out on Raw, I know there was some rumors that he was going to be there, but coming out on Raw to have Paul Heyman lay into Kurt Angle about the fact that Angle's trying to get the belt off of Lesnar, dropping some subtle UFC hints, I guess. I don't know anything about UFC. But making a big bombshell announcement that basically if Brock loses, he's gone. Him and Paul Heyman are taking their ball and going home if he loses the Universal strap. Is this now a foregone conclusion?
I don't know. There was this past weekend, there was a UFC card, and John Bones Jones won the light heavyweight title and called out Brock Lesnar after the match. So there's been some rumors of WWE and UCF working together a little bit. As
the
of
University
late.
Of Central Florida?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. UFC.
That would be good, too.
Working together. And because I guess Becky Lynch has been going back and forth with Chris Cyborg, one of the female fighters, for a little bit. And, I mean, WWE allowed Brock to go fight for UFC a year or so ago.
Do you really think that they would let Becky Lynch fight a cyborg, though?
No, because that
would be, I mean, crazy. I mean, they're made of metal, and cyborgs have very strong hands because they're made of metal.
That they do.
Yeah.
It would probably be in one of the predetermined scripted matches that is sports entertainment.
Yeah, you'd have to watch that. I mean, having their people fight automatons is dangerous.
Maybe there's some insurance for cyborg attacks.
There might be. We'll have to look into that. I'm just interested in the fact that, yeah, well, the rumors are Lesnar is going to go away for a little while. I think it would be fine for him. I think that it opens up a spot at the top of the card, and Lesnar coming back in 6 months to a year would be another big pop. It would be another good thing for him. So having him kind of leave and come back every now and then, I think works for his character. It works for the WWE. But now we're in that situation where it's more likely that we're going to see a title change. It's the perfect opportunity for Lesnar to lose his strap without losing the strap, right? Without getting pinned, and then having him go away after it, not have to get retribution over somebody, and allow some more organic storylines to happen from a week-to-week basis. The Hardys were in the ring for the first match with Anderson and Gallows. This is all led into the finish, where the Matt and Jeff win. Revival's on commentary. We get a three-team brawl to end it. Hardy stand tall at the end of this, but this looks to be, they haven't talked about this being a number one contenders match, but we're looking like we're going to get a triple threat tag team match at SummerSlam that may or may not be for number one contendership. It looks like we're going to get Dean and Seth against Cesaro and Sheamus at SummerSlam. So it'll be very interesting having two tag team feuds going on at one time. This is shocking. We don't see this very often, and you and I like tag team wrestling, so that's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, they did talk a little bit about number one contendership during the match with the Revival getting their reasons in for why they deserve it.
And they did a good job. I think they handled themselves well on commentary.
Yeah.
Not the best job on commentary ever, but they handled themselves
pretty
well.
But I liked the part I think it was Dawson who's like, oh, it's one guy from the team that we beat before against another guy from the other team that we beat before.
They did what they should do. They kept pushing that they won. They should be the number one contenders. They beat these teams, which I think was the right thing to do. And it's the right thing for an old school mentality. Tag team wins and losses matter for those guys.
Yeah.
So this is one of those matches that could be a fun match. I'm not a huge fan of multi-person and multi-tag team matches, but as long as they keep... Actually, we already got for the world title, we have four people going at it. We feel like we might get something Sasha get thrown into the women's feud. We're probably going to get way too many multi-facet matches here in the card. But
facet matches.
Facet math. Anyway, we're probably going to get too many of these no matter what, because we always do. But this might be one of the ones that comes out looking pretty good. And that does lead into the whole fact that Dean and Seth are still not on the same page. And Cesaro and Sheamus are making fun of him backstage, leads to them setting up a match with Cesaro and Seth Rollins later on in the evening. This has consistently been one of the best storylines over the last couple weeks. The Dean and Seth interactions, the will they or won't they. This has been done pretty well. So I'm really happy with it.
Yeah, it's a big change of pace. Sometimes putting stars together into tag team feuds doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But if they really don't have anything going for Seth and Dean in singles type feuds, a reconciliation storyline between two former faction members working, trying to work together and going after a similar goal of tag team titles, I think makes a lot of sense.
And it might remind the fans why they like these guys. And it might remind the booking committee and the writers that these guys could be written better and more interesting because they haven't been for quite some time. Pointless six-man cruiserweight tag team match where we have Arya Daivari, Tony Nese, and the ever-present TJP versus Rich Swann, Cedric Alexander, and Akira Tozawa. Akira Tozawa is wrestling for about a minute before Titus just wants to throw the towel in. Just Titus is just, he's worried about his shoulder. I am convinced that this is some kind of Rocky and Adrian syndrome. This is, you know, Kira and Tozawa, they're in one of those I can't quit you relationships where Titus is just so upset that Akira won't just listen to reason. He has a family that he needs to support. Titus is pregnant and their child needs a father. I think it's a very sweet angle, and it continues on.
Yeah, and he has a title match on 205 Live. That was specifically why he was looking after him.
And Tozawa did win. He ends up getting the pinfall. The TJP count was a respectable 10. And I will say this, for being one of only six people, or as many as six people in that ring, 10 TJPs, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
We didn't hear 10 swans.
No.
Or nieces.
No.
TJP said 10 times.
And I actually correct myself. I said that he was getting a title match at 205 Live. It was him and Arya Daivari for number one contendership.
Okay.
Fighting on 205 Live, where the winner would face Neville at SummerSlam.
And either one of those matches would probably be a good one. I think Tozawa and him still have unfinished business, so I hope it's Tozawa there. And he's the more interesting character right now. The Miz TV segment with Jason Jordan, I don't know. How do you feel about the pairing of Miz and Jason Jordan, just on the surface right now?
It seems a bit rushed to me. This is his first singles feud coming out of this revelation that he is the son of Kurt Angle. And I guess if you're going to make such a crazy accusation, you got to put him into something big right away. And I guess a mid-card title feud is that. We've said this before. I would have preferred to see Miz go on to another feud, one that he can more easily win, just to establish himself more as that Intercontinental Champion. And maybe Jordan should have been given a feeder feud before throwing these two together. I'm fine with the idea of putting them together. I think that they could probably have some good matches and some good interactions, but just seems a little quick.
I think there's some conventional wisdom that because Miz is so good on the mic, and he was gold here, him mentioning Jordan being booed and actually talking about that is a step in the right direction. It shows that WWE is cognizant of what's going on.
They're not completely tone deaf.
And they're willing to use that in a storyline. That makes everything work much better. They ignored it for so long with Roman Reigns. By the time they started mentioning it, it was a parody of itself. Mm-hmm. So good for them on that. But no, Miz is gold on the mic. When you put him next to a guy like Jordan, who is so green in the ring and on the mic, you'd think that this would be a case where Miz will just outclass him and make Jordan look bad. I think that this might be the most genius move they could have done, because Miz is so good at getting heat, and he is so good on the mic, and he can turn people who want to be entertained by him against him. And I think he will do that when this Jordan feud. It's not a definite it's going to be a great slam dunk kind of thing, but I think it has a great possibility. Miz is the right kind of guy to be helping to get Jordan over and make him more important.
Mm-hmm.
Also, are CFOs still doing the music for WWE? Because between Cass's music and Jordan's music going off on their own has not sounded great.
You're exactly right. This is almost akin to like Jim Johnson or actually Jimmy Hart type of stuff.
I was going to say the same thing, Jimmy Hart. Kind of generic music.
Yeah. I know they still are, and you see them tweeting every once in a while about stuff, and I think I saw someone No, that was about someone else's music. But yeah, they're still definitely involved, but they're not doing everyone's music from what I understand.
It's interesting. This Roman Reigns cut one of what became three kind of pre-taped backstage promos from Braun, Roman, and Samoa Joe. At first, when I did this with Roman, I said, oh, the crowd in Pittsburgh was completely against him. They were just kind of protecting him by keeping him away from the from doing a promo in the ring. Turns out they were doing it for all three competitors. It was a good way to push this match or something important. I would have liked to see something like that with Nakamura and Cena for the SmackDown match, what we didn't get. And I thought everyone handled themselves really well, including Braun Strowman. That was probably the best, most concise that Braun Strowman has been on the microphone. I know it was in the backstage and pre-recorded. He probably got a chance to do it a couple times. But Strowman sounded damn good.
Yeah.
He kind of shined in that situation.
Yeah, he sounded great. He sounded confident and came across as $1 million.
Well, you know, that match is all about confidence. We heard that.
Oh, yes.
That was the buzzword of the evening, confidence.
Quick little note. I don't know if people caught this as far as backstage interviews. When they had Seth and Dean earlier in the show backstage, they obviously did multiple takes of it because Seth's hair went from down and into a bun from two different shots.
Oh, did it really? Yeah, yeah, I did not catch that. That's funny. It's all live, Mike. It's all live.
Seth, we're live, pal.
That leads perfectly into the Seth Rollins and Sheamus match. Seth wins a pretty good match. It was a fine match. It leads into a beatdown where Seth is getting taken out by both Cesaro and Sheamus. Cesaro and Sheamus go to leave. We're waiting, right? They're beating up Seth Rollins, so Dean's got to come out to save
him. They're chanting for Dean.
Right. He doesn't come out. Sheamus and Cesaro start walking back down the ramp, and then they look back, and Rollins is trying to get up, and they're just not going to have that. So they go back in to re-beat him down again. That's when Dean comes out. I just want to know what Dean's mentality. I can just imagine him standing there at Gorilla going, you know what? I'm going to let him beat him down once. But if they go down there twice, I'm not having it. He can stand and he can't stand no more, Mike.
It is a strange mentality. Someone on Twitter did mention to us specifically, like, it kind of makes sense that he's just conflicted, sitting in the back going like, I don't care about him. And then it just builds up enough like, I can't just do this anymore. And
it's not that it doesn't work. I mean, listen, sometimes it's just being a little nitpicky and a little pedantic, which I definitely am being here. In general, both Cesaro and Sheamus leave them laying, both Dean and Seth. Just good progression. I love these little storyline threads that go through a night and have resonance in some way, shape, or form. They don't do it enough. They're doing it here, so we have to give them props for it. Bray Wyatt getting what chance, because he has become a parody of the parody that he already became months and years ago. It's a shame. Bray Wyatt used to be one of the most captivating people on the mic, captivating people in the ring. He is just a joke now. No one believes a word he's going to say. Finn is also magical and can control lights. And this...
Or just grease the palm of the light guy.
Sure. I'm just not interested in this feud. I'm not interested in Bray talking about angels and sins. I'm not interested in whatever reason he hates Finn Balor, which we're never going to get a clear idea of why that is. And I'm also not interested in these bad promos leading into a 5-second brawl, and then we get Finn's music and posing. It's not interesting. It's not interesting for Finn. It's not interesting for Bray. This has not been good, and nothing Bray has done has been very good in a very long time.
Bray's promos are just replaceable parts. You can always take one thing out, put in another thing that he's always talking about, and they all sound the same. It's a very bad Mad Libs. It's the guy who puts the same thing in every Mad Libs. Like, all right, I need a verb. Hurt. Okay, another verb, hurt. Another verb, hurt. That just doesn't make sense.
It has not been good. What we thought was going to be the main event, which is three guys that are fighting for a world title coming up, killing Roman frickin' Reigns, ends up going on in the 10 o'clock hour How did you feel about this match? I saw people saying this was just amazing. They were excited because they thought it was building anticipation for the Fatal 4-Way at SummerSlam. I'm in the other camp saying, why do we need to see these three guys square off when we know we have them in 2 weeks at SummerSlam? Keep them apart. It makes it more special. Where do you fall on that?
I mean, we talked a little bit about this type of argument last week with giving away big matches on television, and I can see both ends of the argument, but this, I don't know. It just didn't do it for me. But it was fine. It was serviceable. I hate seeing Joe take the pin, but really in the scheme of things on how WWE wants it, he was the only one who could.
Sure.
They're going to protect Braun, and Roman's not going to take it either. So it gets what you need done. Thankfully, it keeps things from turning into a multi-man match at SummerSlam. But I didn't think that this was as great as some were making it out to be, but it was a Raw match, that's for sure. But it had the potential to be something bigger.
And we're going to see that exact thing almost to the letter at SummerSlam. And that's the thing that kind of bothers me a little bit. Roman does go over. The buzzword, as we mentioned earlier, was confidence. They're always trying to push of momentum and confidence as reasons to have matches and reason why match endings matter when there's no stipulation attached to it. Because wins and losses don't really matter. It's all about confidence and momentum. Roman Reigns, every time he shows up, even to talk, not even to wrestle, music blares through loudspeakers and his name goes 40 feet high on a Jumbotron. He wears a flak jacket for absolutely no reason with his emblem emblazoned on the front. I don't think Roman Reigns is lacking confidence.
No.
I don't think anyone there. I think we look back in the history of professional wrestling.
The referees don't even lack confidence.
I don't think in the history of professional wrestling you can point to very many guys who lack confidence. Just Google a picture of Macho Man Randy Savage, 1994. Look at the outfit that he wore to and around the ring. That man didn't lack confidence. Okay? Hulk Hogan once wore a motorcycle helmet with a giant fist on it. The most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. He wore it for about a month and a half. You got to have confidence to wear that helmet. So I think that pushing the idea of confidence is a little bit ludicrous. Roman Reigns goes over because he is Roman Reigns. Elias Samson does not exist anymore.
Nope.
It is just Elias. He's not the Drifter. Hasn't been the Drifter for some time. Just in case you're wondering, if you're keeping score, he has lost a nickname. He has now lost a last name. He is now simply Elias, which I think is a great move. There was no way a guy with a first and last name was ever going to get over in the WWE. This never happened before.
No.
I can't think of one person who's ever had a first and a last name that has ever been successful in the history of professional wrestling.
Look at the greats like Hulk and Savage and Flair.
Yeah, and Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah. This never happened. Yeah, it's never happened, so let's just move on from that. Elias takes on Apollo Crews' ex-friend Kalisto in a match that Elias Samson is very interesting before the bell. He's not clicking with the fans, I don't think, during the bell, or during between bells, I should say, during the matches. But someone made a very astute comment. It's almost like to get heat, you have to be mediocre in the ring. You can be interesting on the mic, mediocre in the ring, and that equals heel. So I don't think that's what they're going for, but I think it works for his character right now. What Michael Cole and Booker T do when Elias, and I'm going to keep calling him Elias Samson, WWE be damned, it's more interesting. What they do, how they talk about Elias Samson can only be described as swooning. It's the only way you can describe their love affair. Two guys who Booker T is lost. He's completely confused.
Booker T actually said Elias Samson a number of times during the match.
But he is completely confused as over who he likes. He sees blatant cheating, says he loves it. Then another guy cheats. It's dastard. He's just insane. But Michael Cole doesn't say good things about any heels ever. He loves. I mean, he wants. he would marry Elias Samson right now in character, you would imagine. It is amazing. No other person on the WWE roster is more fawned over other than Roman Reigns. It goes Roman Reigns, Elias Samson, John Cena. 1, 2, 3 of the most fawned over and swooned over stars by commentary. It is breathtaking. I don't know where they're going with this.
I don't know if this is a rib on Graves.
Maybe it is. Because Graves is the only... He despises him. But even Graves he respects him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to hear his music, but he respects him in the ring. Even Graves, who despises him, spends most of the time saying nice things about him.
I did like that Graves asked Booker T pretty much if he had a stroke by asking if he smelled toast.
Booker T is just an amazing, he's just an anomaly. Dean and Seth have another backstage. Once again, another thread running through the show, which I think keeps it going in the right direction. We're definitely getting those guys for the tag team titles at SummerSlam, and I think it'll be an interesting match. I am of the opinion I don't want them to win the titles. Mm-hmm. I want them to have problems, maybe have a 2-month feud with Cesaro and Sheamus or something like that, but use that as a Dean Ambrose heel turn, because I think it's the most interesting thing that might be able to come out of this.
Yes.
In general. Kind of a pointless match, and it's not strange that we're saying that in the women's division. Bayley versus Nia Jax. We have seen Bayley and Nia on the main roster so many times, but they've never really been in a feud. It's amazing how many times they have fought when they've never really had direct conflict other than around other people. And we saw some good matches by these gals in NXT, which had really good storytelling behind them and some really good matches. The best matches of Nia Jax's career by far. This was just a thing to happen because Nia is apparently, again, still loosely affiliated with Alexa Bliss.
Yeah.
Which we've seen now for the last 2 weeks, I guess, but for weeks... 2 weeks before that, they weren't talking about it at all. Bayley ends. There's a countout victory for Bayley. She wins via countout. We get a little tease from Alexa talking about basically trying to increase the rift between Sasha and Bayley. Sasha was not there. She was on a tour or doing something else, but talking, insulting Sasha, trying to goad her into attacking Bayley, or at least having them have more issues. I like that part of it. I don't think you needed a match. I think I would have rather seen Emma fight Dana Brooke. You know why? Because they were supposed to have something going on 2 months ago that never was even talked about again.
Yeah.
They had a weird thing happen at a pay-per-view where Dana was on commentary and Emma came up and said something. That has been completely dropped. I would have rather seen the start of the continuation of a storyline there and let just that backstage talking segment with Alexa work out. But we get a pointless match that doesn't serve anybody any good.
Yeah, it just because it's the title feud, they felt like they had to put someone involved in that in a match.
It doesn't make anyone look good. Nia continues to be the biggest badass in the women's division, but she never does anything really of note. She's never even really been a contender for the title other than in Fatal 4-Ways and Triple Threats. And Bayley gets thrown around and looking poor. I don't know who this advances and who that helps. The main event of the show, which strangely once again was not the triple threat match between Roman, Brock, and Joe, is Big Cass versus Big Show. We need to find out who gets the big.
Yes.
Okay.
Big is on the line.
Enzo comes out and does a promo for a reason. Apparently that he needs to talk and shows that he has no business being around. And Enzo can also not stop himself from being a schmucky heel because he jumped. Cass was doing everything completely legally, as far as I can remember. But because Cass got the upper hand on Big Show, Enzo jumps him, causes a DQ win for Big Cass. We end up getting Big Show standing tall with one of the worst knockout punches I've ever seen in my life. And that's how we end the show.
Yeah, it's funny. What you said last night or that night was that was a worst KO punch ever. And that's saying a lot because there's been some bad KO punches.
When they slowed it down, it didn't look as bad. It wasn't that it didn't come close to hitting him. It was that it was just so awkward.
And it's slow.
Cass stopped. And it just didn't look great. Cass looked great. He didn't look good through this match until we had the Enzo interference and until Big Show knocked his head off. I am interested in this feud because I think it's good for Big Cass to go over Big Show. I think Enzo needs to go away.
Yeah.
Enzo needs...
They need to do an injury angle.
They need to do an injury angle. They need to let him go away, let him come back as a mouthpiece for somebody, go to 205 Live, be scrappy. He can still find a proxy to beat up Big Cass, but it's not going to be Big Show because Show is not going to... should not come ahead on this feud. It should be someone else down the road.
I don't think that 205 Live would be a good thing for him unless they want to put him as the figurehead of it and hopes that he can increase viewership and increase some credibility to the cruiserweights. But other than that, I think with his kind of star that he has right now to his name, that putting him there would be pretty much a demotion. But I'm all for writing him off TV for a little bit. Let him relax, let him rest up. And then we've talked about this before. Have him bring in a stable of guys that try to take down Big Show. Or not Big Show, Big Cass. It's a little different for a face to be doing something like that, but as opposed to a heel, but it could make for something interesting and unique.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yes. All right, so moving on to SmackDown Live. We started things off, we have two big matches scheduled for this show. We have the U.S. title match, AJ against Kevin Owens, and then Nakamura and Cena for number one contendership. And we start things off with the U.S. title match, AJ defending against KO. We had a pretty standard AJ and KO match going on, leading up to a very convoluted finish.
Another one.
Where KO glances Mike Chioda. Even afterwards, he said that he got hit by wind. And this causes Chioda to grab at his eyes. I don't know if it was maybe supposed to be fingers across the eyes or whatnot. And this then turns into AJ pinning KO, but his shoulder was up the entire time because Chioda counted without really seeing the pins, claiming he was, everything was blurry. So we know that this is going to lead to KO complaining about it. I didn't think it would happen so quickly. We get backstage Chioda talking to Shane and Brian. Brian admitting, or both of them admitting, that there was something wrong, that he made the wrong call. But KO comes in upset, demanding a rematch. Shane gives it to him, and KO wants a competent referee, and Brian says, all right, it'll be Shane McMahon. So special guest referee Shane for the U.S. title match at SummerSlam.
We have had now a title change on a house show, a bizarre, which may have been a flub, may not have been, at the last pay-per-view finish to their match, a triple threat where AJ kind of stole the pin, and then another wonky finish. This feud has not really gotten the momentum because we've got a lot of weird stuff going on around it.
Yeah. And these are two guys who you don't build weird finishes around.
You don't need to. AJ could have beat Kevin Owens there. It would have been fine. As long as Kevin Owens gets his heat back by going and beating somebody else up.
Because he's a heel. He complains.
Yeah, he's Kevin Owens. He can definitely survive that. So it's something different. It's something new. I like seeing these guys. To me, it screams of they don't know what else to do with these guys at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. They don't know what else to do with the U.S. title, so let's just keep this going for as long as possible. And this is one way that we thought of doing it. This is better than KO fighting Shane McMahon at SummerSlam.
Yeah,
I don't ever want to see that.
No.
I don't ever want to see Shane McMahon wrestle another match. There's no reason for it. There's plenty of wrestlers on the show that can wrestle a better match and a more interesting match than Shane McMahon can. So that's a bonus. Having Shane as the referee, okay, I'm cool with that, even though it's probably going to set up KO and Shane at like Survivor Series or something dumb. I'm not enthralled by this feud. I think it's been very strangely booked.
Yeah.
But I really want to see one tear the house down match between these guys. Maybe it'll happen at SummerSlam.
Yeah. Then we get the Usos out doing the New Day intro, getting people kind of psyched. The moment it started, I was like, that doesn't sound like Big E. And I picked up pretty quick. It was one of the Usos doing the whole
You're
intro
so
shtick.
Smart, Mike.
And they come out cutting a kind of rhyming promo, a rap promo on the New Day. And it was a little strange because it... The way they were talking, they were looking at people in the crowd, but they were actually talking directly to the New Day. And
it looked like they were the New Day were in the ring and they were talking to them. That's what I was like, are they in the ring? No, they're not. I thought this was a great promo.
I'm liking more and more of the Usos being themselves every week.
The Usos have done an incredible job with their heel turn, and it looks like and it seems like they're not getting written very specifically. It seems like there is a good amount of their own words in there, their own personality. And if it's not, it's even more of a credit to them because they're making these words sound like their own. I've been extremely impressed. We did not need to see the New Day. This is fine that they were off TV. This is fine that it was simply a promo and they were egging the crowd on. Everything about this works, and it makes us want to see this match even more. So this was a definite win segment, in my opinion.
I absolutely agree with you. We had a Fashion Files after being off air for a week. Was it Fashion Peaks? I really enjoy this as a fan of Twin Peaks. I could see where people who have never seen Twin Peaks, like Kevin, were very confused about some of the things because the references on the board, all of the references in just the presentation were very much geared towards Twin Peaks. And that being a strange David Lynch show just can come across as strange. What the hell is going on?
I enjoyed it for a person who didn't get many of the references. I agree. I understand that Twin Peaks is a weird show and backwards talking and things like that happen, so I kind of got that part of it. The important thing for me is we were kind of sold a bill of goods that we were going to find out who trashed their office at the last pay-per-view. We didn't. We also didn't see them last week on SmackDown, so we're 2 weeks later and we're still trying to figure this out. Mm-hmm. It's fine. They didn't have time for it. Whatever it is, the reason they wanted to extend this out. But I want to get to it. I'm ready to get to the feud now. I'm ready to find out who it was. And our clues apparently are a block of wood, maple syrup, and a rose. I don't know what that means. Maybe Adam Rose is a tag teaming with Log from the Ren and Stimpy show. And that's going to be the tag team that trashed the office. It's the best guess I have.
You just cracked the code. Congratulations. This is so going to happen. After this, we had a match between Sami Zayn and Aiden English. Aiden English, for the second week in a row, completes his song. Raw does not look out for their artists on their show.
Well, Elias did his whole song on the last episode of Raw.
He did?
Yeah, he did it.
I didn't notice that. Yeah.
Well, Kalisto wasn't important enough to interrupt him.
Yeah, very true. Aiden gets a surprise win here.
Creative roll-up, creative kind of pinning. I can't remember exactly how you would call it, but he rolled him up in a creative way. It was a roll-up. It was a flash pin. It came off as super fluky, but Aiden English is now pinned Ty Dillinger, who we were shocked by because Ty has been totally misused in the main roster, and then goes and beats Sami Zayn.
Mm-hmm. Who is the resident punching bag, pretty much.
Yeah.
Or pinning bag. And Mike and Maria come out afterwards. They have some words for Sami, and that's pretty much it.
I don't even know what they said.
No, I don't either.
They were there for 10 seconds.
Yeah. What's a SmackDown Live without a good old woman's tag match? So we got Carmella and Natty taking on Becky and Naomi. James Ellsworth is back from his suspension, his kayfabe suspension. And what's the tag name that you developed for Becky and Naomi? Or no, that you didn't develop it. Actually, Tom Phillips did.
Was James Ellsworth back?
Yeah, he was at ringside.
He was?
Yeah.
I didn't even see him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I think it was Fire and Glow.
Something like that.
I actually kind of like that name for them, but whatever. It doesn't look good in the black light because Becky doesn't have anything that glows.
And let's not encourage them to put them together as a tag team. That's not going to do much for anybody.
Good girls win with a kind of fun little finish. We had Carmella with the Code of Silence on Naomi, and she was able to reverse it into her submission hold that I don't... The glow lock, I don't know. But
works.
It was a nice transition. I enjoyed seeing that.
She had a couple nice little spots in this match. I'm noticing a more versatile offense from Naomi recently.
Not as much ass-based.
Right, and she didn't do those atrocious kicks that just look so bad when she does them. But this, the little knee slide into a slap in the face, mm-hmm. much more of a heel tactic, in my opinion.
It is, yeah.
But I can see it getting over in 2017 for a babyface. I was impressed. I thought that in the limited time Naomi was in the ring, she showed some real fire. She showed some a few new moves. And that transition into her finisher, that finishing submission hold has been great. I really like it. And I like how she's used it so far. It's she's done a good job. She's definitely improving in the ring.
What is your thought on most wrestlers having a submission and an impact finisher?
I love it. I don't know if there's enough impact finishers and submissions to go around, mm-hmm. but I like when guys have that because I think it means that you can end a match in different ways.
Yeah.
Only having one way to end a match and get a win is, to me, less interesting than when everyone has something else they can do. And I'd be fine if it was like a secondary finisher. If they ever were to, when Dolph was hot, actually let him win a match with the Famouser, I would have been like, okay, cool. We mm-hmm. have a couple different ways a match could end. So a few guys do. Kevin Owens have won a few matches with the super kick, I believe. Rusev the same way. But that's much more rare than someone having an impact and a submission finisher.
Yeah, I've always been a fan of it. I loved when they gave like Edge the Executioner back in the day to also go with his spear. And I think he might have even been using the... that impact DDT still at that point. But yeah, I like multiple finishes, especially if you can add a submission one in there.
And especially when they're interesting. When you look mm-hmm. at Naomi's finisher, I haven't seen it before. It looks impressive.
Yeah, it's kind of like a reverse double chicken wing of sorts.
And she's found a way to put it on creatively so far, which is another really cool thing that we usually see from guys like AJ. We've seen great transitions and cool applications from Cesaro and Daniel Bryan over the years. So it is impressive. She's definitely worked to hone her craft.
Yeah. Then we get a singles match between Rusev and Chad Gable. We had a really nice competitive match here. Some really good suplexes in there. You would remember very early on mentioned how Rusev suplexed Gable where it looked like he brute force picked him up.
Oh, yeah.
And then Gable had those three belly-to-belly, overhead belly-to-bellies that he held on to. Kind of like the German suplexes or the Three Amigos. Rusev wins after that nice match, cuts a promo about not getting respected, not getting what he wanted, saying he wanted a title match, and they gave me John Cena. And out comes Randy Orton. Says that he will be his opponent at SummerSlam if he wants. Rusev speaks for what felt like a long time in Bulgarian, although it was probably like a minute. And then RKO, because fuck Rusev.
First the good. This was an excellent match. It showed some good mat wrestling from Rusev. It showed a different kind of match. We don't see that very often. We don't see... Gable spent the first 2-3 minutes of this match just trying to take a single leg or a double leg takedown of Rusev. Gable looked great in this. He definitely has, because of his size, he has that underdog, hard worker, technician pedigree. Mm-hmm. And Rusev is excellent. Rusev has a lot to give. So the fact that Rusev went over Gable here was probably the right move. Rusev beat the smaller man. Gable is in that Sami Zayn kind of camp where he can get beat to get sympathy, but he's a good worker, and I think the people will get behind him as long as they give him the right kind of push and they feed him enough victories when he needs them. So this was all great. It featured two guys that have been underutilized and allowed one of them to go over cleanly. Everything about this worked. This made sense to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Randy Orton came out. Randy Orton, who has been probably one of the most uninteresting wrestlers in the world for the last couple years. Incredible physique, great pedigree in the ring, and how many times do you have to say when he's motivated, he can be incredible. There's been a couple things he's done interesting. The lead up to the Brock Lesnar feud last SummerSlam, Randy looked reborn as a babyface for about a week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, we've had documented how many times we have despised the Bray Wyatt stuff. Randy's a heel. He's a better heel. He's always a heel. He shows up and deflates to me the entire thing. I don't want to see Rusev and Randy Orton. I don't want to see this. I have no interest in it whatsoever. It's not exciting at all. And I'm once again worried that Randy just lost to Jinder three times, three consecutive pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to go over Rusev.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to go over Rusev. I could be wrong. This could be a perfect thing in the eyes of the WWE to give Rusev a major victory over an important, you know, a guy with a great legacy and a surefire Hall of Famer. I just don't trust him in that, and I'm worried that we're going to see Rusev lose to John Cena in his first time he comes back, and then he loses to Randy Orton. It's like the perfect WWE booking.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But now it's time for the main event. Shinsuke Nakamura, John Cena, dream match on SmackDown Live for number one contendership for Jinder Mahal's world title at SummerSlam. And this was, it wasn't blowing the hinges off the door amazing. This was pretty much what you would expect for two guys wrestling for the first time, kind of.
On SmackDown, without a lot of time and with very little buildup. I thought this was a solid match, and I think that, like many matches on SmackDown, it was starting to really get good at the end. There was some good spots at the end that if they would have led to another 5 or 10 minutes in the match would have been incredible. But it just never really got that steam going.
We had Nakamura kick out of an AA, as anyone does in a big match against Big Match John anymore. Then he hit another AA on Nakamura and did the roll through to try to do a second in a row. But Nakamura slipped out of that, hit that backwards exploder, and John Cena landed very awkwardly and scarily, that's not a word, on the back of his neck. Then, by the grace of John Cena's impeccable health, he is alive, gets up, eats a Kinshasa, 1, 2, 3. Nakamura wins clean, and then Cena endorses him after the match, holds up his hand, tells the crowd, cheer for this man, and it almost in a passing of the torch look to things. And now we have Nakamura going to SummerSlam to take on Jinder Mahal.
I was shocked by this. I was not expecting this at all. I have been talking about the fact that John Cena is going to defeat Jinder Mahal because he's the ultimate American and Jinder's a ruthless, dirty heel, foreign heel. So many people on every wrestling publication have said that's going to happen. So it wasn't just like I was a genius or I was the only person thinking that. Turns out, completely wrong. We're going to see Nakamura go to fight for the world title. This is a right move. I was just shocked that it was going to happen. I can't believe they let Nakamura go over Cena clean on a SmackDown. We'd heard that Cena may be showing up on Raw sooner rather than later, so maybe this is a way to get him off SmackDown for a short period of time, even though he's a free agent. He can go back and forth as he pleases, apparently. It was very shocking to see. I'm happy with the outcome, but there's that little bug in the back of my brain that says that Vince McMahon and the WWE are never really going to get behind Nakamura. They haven't pushed him as something special yet. He wrestles 50-50 matches. He didn't do his crazy knee strikes to Cena. He wasn't allowed and has not been allowed to really display the quote-unquote strong style. And now, not only hasn't been able to do that, he then, whether it was his fault, John Cena's fault, a combination of the two, which is probably the situation, that suplex that dropped John Cena on his head, we've seen a lot of people over the years do things like that and get, not necessarily reprimanded for it, but they lose faith in those guys really
shuffle
quickly
down the card
because they're worried that you're going to kill the golden goose. And I'm not a wrestler. You're not a wrestler. I have no idea what happened there. Cena's a big freaking guy. That's a hard move to perform on a guy that is not only taller than you, but much, much bigger and more massive than you are. And that looked pretty, pretty ugly. And who knows? Just because Cena got up, Cena's a beast.
Oh, yeah.
Just because he got up and took a Kinshasa and was able to stand in the ring and endorse Shinsuke does not mean he didn't fracture a vertebrae in his neck.
No. I mean, remember, this guy had his nose broken by Seth Rollins and continued a match. Yeah.
So he could... that we won't know, but there's a possibility that he injured Cena and put him out. We don't know yet. That would not look very good for him, and I'm very, very worried for something like that.
Yeah, that was a very scary moment. You don't ever really like to see stuff like that happen in the ring. So hopefully Cena is all right, and hopefully nothing comes of this to negatively affect Nakamura. But we have a title match now booked for SummerSlam on the SmackDown side of things. And that does it for SmackDown for this week. Things being set in motion for the pay-per-view this week on television. Not super pressing, but just starting to get seeds planted in some feuds, like the tag team feuds, the tag team title feud in Raw. Now starting a title match here. And continuing on with things that have started already. So we're just heading down that road to the end of summer and SummerSlam coming up in a few weeks. Anything else you want to add about these shows this week or anything else in the world of wrestling you want to talk about, Kev?
Not really, sir.
All right. Well, let's wrap things up then. Thanks again, everyone, for watching us. Make sure you check out our social media outlets online. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Spots. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. And you can get this podcast in one of many different fashions, not just on our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com, but also iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play Music, TuneIn, Podcast Addict, Overcast, pretty much any app that has podcasts available on it. You can get us on there. Otherwise, we'll see you guys next week for a brand new episode. For Kevin, my name is Mike. Good night. Good wrestling.